afternoon. My name is Callie, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the fourth quarter earnings call for Sequel Communications. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you, Mr. Pete Able, Senior Vice President of Communications. You may begin your conference.
Good morning, and welcome to this discussion of the fourth quarter and full year 2010 results for Sequel Communications Holdings One, LLC, and its subsidiaries, which do business as Suddenlink Communications. Before we get started this morning, we would like to remind you that certain statements made during this conference call might be considered forward-looking statements within the meaning of the Private Securities Litigation Act of 1995. Those statements are subject to the various risks and uncertainties described in our annual report, which is posted to our website. These risks and uncertainties could cause actual future results to differ materially from the results expressed or implied by any forward-looking statements made on this call. The information discussed today will be based on our annual report and quarterly earnings release for the period ended December 31st, 2010. Both the annual report and earnings release have been posted to the investor relations section of our website at suddenlink.com. The release compares actual and pro forma financial and operating results for the fourth quarters and full years of 2010 and 2009. Today, our presenters will focus their comments on year-over-year pro forma results for the fourth quarter. With that, I'll now turn the call over to our CEO, Jerry Kent. Jerry?
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us. I'm pleased to report that we executed very well in the fourth quarter and throughout 2010, and we remain in outstanding financial condition. We generated nearly $16 million of free cash flow last year, as defined in the earnings release posted on our website, despite the capital expenditures associated with Project Imagine. We had approximately $290 million of cash and cash equivalents on hand at December 31st, with no current plans to draw on our $200 million revolver. We continued to delever in 2010. Total leverage was at 5.07 times EBITDA December 31st. Net of all cash, our leverage was at 4.65 times EBITDA. Although we added leverage in January as part of our most recent bond offering, our track record and solid operating performance give us confidence we'll be able to deleverage in the months to come. One of our 2010 goals was to focus on growth in customer relationships, and we successfully added 6,500 homes to our customer relationships in 2010. While there's been a lot of discussion about so-called cord cutting, we reduced video churn in 2010 versus 2009 and had approximately 37,000 fewer disconnects year over year. The fourth quarter of 2010 represented our 17th consecutive quarter of pro forma revenue growth, with approximately $434 million in total revenue, an increase of 8.7% over the year-ago period. For the full year, revenue was approximately $1.69 billion, up 7.7% over 2009. Fourth quarter adjusted EBITDA was approximately $162 million, which was a 7.1% increase over the year-ago period. Excluding certain non-recurring expenses, primarily related to deal costs for the pending NPG acquisition, adjusted EBITDA would have increased 7.9%. An accounting rule change requires all costs for deals, including those that are successfully consummated, to be expensed when incurred. For the full year, adjusted EBITDA was $618 million, an increase of 9.8% over 2009. Revenue-generating units, or RGUs, increased approximately 36,500 during the fourth quarter of 2010 to more than 3.05 million. In the trailing 12 months, RGUs increased 8.1%, or nearly 230,000 total RGUs, representing our best ever annual performance in RGU net gains. ARPU, our average revenue per unit, in the fourth quarter was $118.41, which is 11.6% higher than ARPU in the fourth quarter of 2009. Video ARPU was $57.47, up 5.5% over the year-ago period. This increase is attributable to customer rate adjustments coupled with higher penetration of digital and advanced services. Data ARPU was $32.60, up slightly versus the year-ago period. Telephony ARPU was $27.94, down 9.9% versus the year-ago period. The year-over-year decline in telephony ARPU was largely the result of bundling and package discounting. We continue to make progress in bundling customers. Bundled customers are less susceptible to competitive offers and churn. In total, we added more than 10,000 bundled customers in the fourth quarter of 2010 and nearly 65,000 during the year. As a result, bundled customers represented nearly 59% of all customer relationships at December 31st, 2010, which is up from approximately 54% at December 31st, 2009. This growth in bundled customers was mainly attributable to growth in triple play customer relationships, which represented 21% of all customer relationships at December 31st, 2010, up from 16.6% a year earlier. Our commercial organization, serving small and medium-sized businesses, continued its momentum and had an outstanding year. We gained market share in both phone and data services in the fourth quarter, and our carrier business saw rising demand from wireless carriers that need higher bandwidth connectivity between cell towers and central offices. Tom McMillan will provide details during his presentation. We also continued to see a rebound in advertising sales in the fourth quarter, with revenues in that category up 24.9% over the year-ago period, benefiting from the increase in political advertising during the midterm election season. Next, I'd like to comment briefly on our bandwidth investment plan, which we call Project Imagine, and calls for approximately $230 million of infrastructure investments through 2012, above and beyond our traditional capital spending levels. We estimate these additional investments will drive up to $120 million more success-based capital through 2012, namely for advanced digital set-top boxes. As a reminder, when Project Imagine is completed, high-definition service should be available to approximately 96% of our customers, and we should average approximately 90 HD channels on our lineup, with the capacity in most areas for up to 200 high-definition channels. We'll also have video-on-demand service, telephone service, and DOCSIS 3.0 technology deployed to more than 90% of our customers. In the current phase of Project Imagine, we continue to distribute digital adapters to customers so we can transition to all digital lineups, reclaim bandwidth, and add even more services, including more HD channels and video-on-demand content. After more than 16 months into Project Imagine, I'm very pleased with our progress, which Tom will detail in a few moments. We firmly believe Project Imagine and our focus on customer care have been instrumental to our recent success, including our greatly improved performance in video. Our basic video performance in 2010 was 21.5% better than in 2009, as we reduced full-year basic video losses by 7,800 units. In digital video, we added 104,500 units in 2010, which is 115% better than our 2009 digital video net gain. In addition, we experienced a loss of less than 12,000 expanded basic customers in 2010, meaning the majority of our video losses were Lifeline basic-only customers. In 2010, we saw residential high-speed internet gains of 75,500, which is slightly better than the 2009 net gain. We added 50 megabits per second to 107 megabits per second service to 13 markets in 2010 and increased speeds across our footprint in 60 markets, affecting 650,000 internet customers. In short, We believe Project Imagine is positioned as well to fight for market share in a highly competitive video and internet marketplace while allowing us to extend our industry-leading broadband internet service via the deployment of DOCSIS 3.0 technology. Finally, I note we are making solid progress on our announced acquisition of NPG Cable and fully expect to close that acquisition in early April as previously indicated. Our team is very proud of our 2010 results, and we believe we are in excellent position to continue growth in RGUs, revenue, and commercial services in 2011. I'll now turn the floor over to Tom McMillan, our Chief Operating Officer, to provide additional perspective on Project Imagine and our operating results for the fourth quarter of 2010. Tom.
Thanks, Jerry. I'd now like to drill down into some of the operating results that Jerry touched on, looking specifically at operational results in the fourth quarter. In doing so, I will use the pro forma numbers included in the earnings release. On that basis, we ended the quarter with more than 3.05 million revenue-generating units, or RGUs, up 36,500 units over the end of the third quarter, and nearly 230,000 RGUs, or 8.1%, in the trailing 12 months. On basic video, we ended the quarter with approximately 1.22 million customers. That mark is down 2.3% in the trailing 12 months. But as Jerry noted, our basic video performance in 2010 was notably better than in 2009. Basic penetration of estimated homes passed at December 31 was 45.4%. On digital video, we ended the quarter with more than 651,000 customers, up 20,500 units in the quarter and nearly 105,000 units, or 19.1% growth in the trailing 12 months. By far a record year for us. Digital penetration of basic video customers at the end of the year was 53.6%, up from 44% a year ago. Along with our growth in digital video, we added more than 13,000 DVR customers during the fourth quarter 2010 and nearly 58,000 over the last 12 months, an annual growth rate of 22.1%. DVR penetration of digital customers grew to 48.8%. Looking at the HD category, we added more than 78,000 HD customers over the last 12 months, representing 30.5% annual growth and bringing HD penetration of digital customers to 51.5%, up from 47% a year ago. Total penetration of advanced digital services, both DVR and HD customers, stood at 55% of digital customers at the end of the fourth quarter 2010, up from 51.2% at the end of the fourth quarter 2009. On high-speed internet, we finished the quarter with more than 826,000 residential customers, up nearly 13,000 units during the quarter and more than 75,000 units, or 10.1%, since December 2009. As a result, residential data penetration was 31.8% of estimated data homes passed, up from 29.1% a year ago. As those penetration figures suggest, despite our success, we still serve less than 1 in 3 homes passed and have a meaningful opportunity to grow market share with our market-leading internet products. On telephony, we finished the quarter with nearly 359,000 residential customers, up approximately 13,000 units during the quarter and approximately 78,000 units, or 27.8% growth since the year-ago period. As a result, residential telephony penetration at December 31 was 16.3%, or roughly 1 in 6 of estimated telephony homes passed. Entering the year, we talked a great deal about our emphasis on growing residential customer relationships, and I'm pleased to say that 2010 was the first year we grew customer relationships since we started tracking this metric. Also during the year, we added approximately 3,400 commercial internet customers and 5,900 commercial phone customers. Our 11,100 commercial phone customers at December 31 represented 113.5% increase over our year-end 2009 total, And in the fourth quarter of 2010, we augmented our commercial telephone offering by enabling what is known as PRI phone service, which is well suited for medium-sized businesses that need 15 or more phone lines. Early indications are positive for this service based on customer demand and installations. We've also seen growth in our business providing fiber to the tower for cellular carriers. This segment offers a great market opportunity with an estimated 2,000 to 3,000 addressable towers in our footprint. We now have nearly 200 tenants in our billing system, with approximately 400 more tenants that have committed to purchase services from Suddenlink or are in the process of being installed, and pending proposals outstanding for another 500 tenants. Many of the initial anchor tenants that we have sold are co-located with other tenants on the same tower. We estimate that there are between 1.5 and 2 tenants per tower for the towers that we have in billing and backlog today. And once the first tenant is sold, we have the opportunity to aggressively pursue other tenants on the tower to leverage our fiber build-out to each tower. Finally, today I want to comment briefly on Project Imagine, adding to what Jerry said. We are very excited about this 3-year initiative, which is now nearing its midpoint. When all phases are complete in 2012, this plan will help reshape our company for the future and further improve customer experience with Suddenlink. In the current phase of Project Imagine, as Jerry noted, we continue to distribute digital adapters to customers so that we can transition to all digital lineups, reclaim bandwidth, add even more services, including HD channels and video on demand content. Through December 31, we had distributed more than 716,000 digital adapters in 36 cable systems. Furthermore, we had achieved the following Project Imagine milestones at December 31. DOCSIS 3.0 technology was deployed to cable systems serving 73% of our customers. Video on demand service was also available to more than 73% of basic video customers. On demand content now includes more than 6,000 titles, including more than 600 HD titles. Access to high definition services was at 91%, and our weighted average number of HD channels was at 58. With several markets providing more than 70 HD channels. Our current lineup of HD services has increased dramatically from the 24 HD channels we offered on average before the start of Project Imagine. Beyond Project Imagine, we began to introduce Suddenlink TiVo Premier DVR service in the fourth quarter in West Texas and have continued to expand the availability of this device in 2011. Suddenlink TiVo Premier combines our video service with TiVo's best-in-class user interface to offer access to thousands of hours of entertainment choices, including content from Suddenlink's video on demand library and the web, all accessible through TiVo's advanced search and discovery features. Additional features include remote DVR scheduling via smartphone app or computer and a soon-to-be-introduced iPad interface. To date, Suddenlink is the only multi-channel TV service provider to offer TiVo Premier in the communities we serve. Thank you for your time today. I'd now like to turn things over to our CFO, Mary Medusky, for a closer look at our financial results during the quarter. Mary?
Thanks, Tom. Today I'll discuss the financial results for Sequel Communications Holdings 1 LLC and subsidiaries for the fourth quarter of 2010. Adding to what Jerry and Tom have already provided. I will also discuss our balance sheet and liquidity position. As Jerry and Tom did, I will focus my comments on pro forma fourth quarter year-over-year results, drawing on our annual report and earnings release. Our annual report is available on our website. For the bank lenders listening to this call, our bank lender package, which covers Sequel Communications LLC and subsidiaries, has been posted to Intralinks, including a copy of our compliance certificate. As expected, we were in compliance with all of our bank covenants at December 31st, 2010, all with significant cushion. The pro forma information we discussed today excludes two small non-strategic cable systems that we disposed of in 2010 and includes the cable system we acquired in August 2010 as if those transactions had been consummated on January 1, 2010. At December 31st, our total funded debt outstanding was approximately $3.17 billion, comprised of $1.2 billion of 8.625% senior notes at Sequel Communications Holdings 1, $1.96 billion of first lien term loans at Sequel Communications LLC, and $3.2 million of capital leases at Sequel Communications LLC. We have a $200 million undrawn revolver, fully available except for $12.6 million of outstanding letters of credit. At December 31st, we had approximately $289.7 million of cash on hand. We had interest rate hedges in place covering $1.925 billion, or substantially all of our funded bank debt. The weighted average duration of our swap portfolio was reduced to 1.2 years at year-end 2010. Our weighted average cost of funded debt, including the senior notes, is approximately 7.91%. Of note, on January 19, 2011, Sequel Communications Holdings 1 issued an additional $625 million aggregate principal amount of 8.625% senior notes due in November 2017. These notes are part of the same series as our existing senior notes, bringing the total to $1.825 billion of senior notes due November 2017. The additional notes were sold at a premium of 102.875 to yield 7.89%. We used the proceeds of the issuance to repay the original capital contributions to holders of our preferred interest, repay a portion of original capital contributions to holders of our common interest, and pay fees and expenses. In addition, we plan to use the remaining proceeds plus cash on hand to fund the MPG acquisition in early April. Assuming the bond transaction, the distributions, and the MPG acquisition all happened at December 31, 2010, our net leverage would have been approximately 5.65 times, and our cash balance would have been approximately $78.3 million. Now for a few comments on our fourth quarter financial results, pro forma for acquisitions and divestitures. As Jerry mentioned, total revenue for the fourth quarter of 2010 was $434.4 million, representing growth of 8.7% or $34.9 million over the fourth quarter 2009. Video expenses increased 2.8% over the fourth quarter of 2009, due primarily to basic video rate increases, increased premium and pay-per-view service revenue, and customer growth in our digital and advanced video services, offset in part by a lower number of basic video customers and digital customers taking fewer digital tiers. High-speed internet revenues increased 11% over the year-ago period due to an increase of 75,500 residential high-speed internet customers during 2010, and growth in our commercial high-speed internet services for small and medium-sized businesses. Telephone revenues increased 24.2% over the year-ago period, primarily due to an increase of 78,000 residential telephone customers during 2010, as well as growth in our commercial services for small and medium-sized businesses. Advertising revenues increased 24.9% versus the fourth quarter of 2009, largely due to higher local and national advertising sales revenue, including political advertising during the midterm elections. Advertising represented 5.3% of total revenue in the fourth quarter of 2010 versus 4.6% of total revenue in the fourth quarter of 2009. Other revenues increased 14.1% over the year-ago period, due to, among other things, increased converter rental charges for HD and DVR digital converters, increased home networking revenues, increased administrative fees associated with growth of the business, higher franchise fees related to video revenue increases, and increased wire maintenance revenue. Our commercial lines of business embedded in the consolidated results described above and in the press release are comprised of commercial and bulk video, commercial high-speed internet, including carrier sales, and commercial telephone. Our commercial business saw strong growth in the fourth quarter and full year 2010. Commercial revenue totaled $47.3 million, or 10.9% of total revenue in the fourth quarter 2010, representing growth of 12.4% versus the fourth quarter 2009. Commercial revenue totaled $180.7 million, or 10.7% of total revenue for the full year 2010, which was 11.3% growth over the full year 2009. Operating costs and expenses rose 9.7% versus the fourth quarter of 2009, primarily due to higher programming costs, higher telephone service costs, increased net compensation and employee-related expenses, including contract labor, higher technical operating expenses, increased general insurance and workers' comp, higher bad debt expense, and non-recurring acquisition-related due diligence expenses. As a result, adjusted EBITDA for the fourth quarter 2010 was $161.9 million, an increase of 7.1% from the same quarter last year, resulting in an adjusted EBITDA margin of 37.3%. Net income was $3.9 million for the fourth quarter 2010 compared to a net loss of $18.8 million for the fourth quarter 2009. The net loss in the fourth quarter 2009 was primarily attributable to losses on the extinguishment of debt and the termination of interest rate swap contracts associated with our November 2009 financing activities. Full year 2010 capital expenditures were approximately $354.1 million, which was within our 2010 guidance. In 2011, we expect capital expenditures to be between $330 and $340 million, inclusive of Project Imagine and success-based capital. As a reminder, we expect to spend a total of approximately $230 million on Project Imagine over the three-year period ending in 2012. Through year-end 2010, we spent $123 million of those funds. In addition, Project Imagine is expected to drive an additional $120 million of success-based capital over this period, bringing the total planned investment of Project Imagine to $350 million over the three-year period. As Jerry mentioned, the company was free cash flow positive for the fourth quarter and full year 2010, and we expect to be free cash flow positive for the full year 2011. With this, I'll conclude my comments and turn the call back over to the operator to facilitate questions. I would like to remind everyone that this is a public call, and we will generally refrain from discussing information other than what is disclosed in our earnings release and annual report. Operator?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, to ask a question, please press star one. We will pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Jason Kim with Goldman Sachs.
Great, thanks. First question for Jerry. I want to get a sense of the competitive dynamics during the quarter. You know, we've heard from some of your peers that there were some really aggressive DSL and satellite offers out there in the fourth quarter, and I was wondering if you saw a similar promotions and if that affected your RGU gains in the quarter.
Sure, Jason. This is Tom. I would say that we did see fairly consistent offers. AT&T had a $14.95 DSL offer out in the marketplace, and we certainly were competing with that. Both Dish and Direct had low optical price point, two-year contract offers in the marketplace as well. However, on the video side, we had pretty good success, at least year over and from a year-over-year comparability standpoint. So we certainly more than held our own on video. Internet was a little bit weaker year-over-year for us. We really don't see that is necessarily an indicator of anything different going on. As we've talked, we focus a lot on share versus yield and the balance of share versus yield. We maintained healthy ARPU growth, not only total ARPU, but recurring service ARPU. And I think, once again, we did a good job of balancing that against our GU growth. Jerry, I don't know if
One that I would add that I find very interesting is CenturyLink is offering a 3 meg internet service plus telephone service for $60 a month, but they guarantee that price for 5 years. And that's obviously a very aggressive offer. Why you would guarantee internet service at a certain price for 5 years, not knowing where it's going, and if you're going to consumption-based billing, and I wonder about that, but it's an aggressive offer that we're faced with. But so the short answer to your question is yes, we continue to see aggressive offers.
And now that the, the first quarter is almost over, so wondering if you can share with us what you've seen so far. And I know it's been a pretty recent phenomenon, but if there are any initial reactions to Dish's price increases that they've implemented a couple weeks ago?
We're getting into the realm of projections and all, and we're on a public call, but suffice it to say that year-to-date, we haven't seen anything unusual from what we've been experiencing in the past.
Okay, and then a couple questions for Mary. This is the first quarter in a while where we saw your margins decline a bit year-over-year. Was there any one-time items impacting this quarter, especially in the SG&A line? I know you've called out the some due diligence costs associated with the MPG cable acquisitions, but is there anything else that impacted your SG&A line in the quarter?
Yeah, there were a few items that impacted us in the fourth quarter that we don't necessarily see as repeating. There were some one-time and non-recurring expenses Jerry mentioned, and we have in our press release about $500,000 for MPG acquisition-related costs. There were other costs that we incurred on our control readiness program to get us in the position of being SOX compliant over time. We also incurred contract labor costs higher than in the fourth quarter of 2009 for a number of reasons, including our door-to-door sales program and activities related to the DTAs that we've deployed in various markets. We saw a seasonal uptick in medical claims. We saw something similar in prior years. Our bad debt expense ticked up a little bit in the fourth quarter and has returned to normalized levels in the first quarter. So a few different reasons contributing to that performance. On the full year basis, we saw margin improvement and the 9.8% growth in EBITDA margin.
Got it. And just lastly on programming, it looks like programming was up about 8% in 2010 on a per sub basis. And I'm wondering if there are some big programming contract renewals that will push the cost line item to go up at a faster rate in 2011 versus 2010.
We do have programming renewals coming up, and but I don't know that we forecast any different experience than we have had historically, and that rate has been pretty constant over time.
We did. I'd also note we did. If you recall, it's been a while now, but in the second half of the year, we added the NFL Network. So there were some costs associated with that, and having a record year in digital performance, obviously some of those folks are taking digital tiers, so there's going to be an uptick in that as well as you look at just the aggregate number.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Your next question comes from the line of Bishop Chen with Wells Fargo.
Hi. Thanks for the very detailed update and taking the question. So, Mary, I just want to double-check a couple of things with all the moving parts. All the tables in your press release, of course, are very helpful. Do you have any plans, once you close on NPG, to reissue this as pro forma for NPG?
When we close NPG, our results will be compared on a pro forma basis as if we owned NPG in the comparable period. It is our custom to provide pro forma results. So when we close NPG on the next subsequent earnings call, we will show our results pro forma as if we owned NPG in the comparable period, if that's your question.
I understand that for Q1. So to be specific, for year-end 2010, Would we get any statement pro forma of NBG for all the key metrics for 2010?
Yes. We in our press release, we have actual tables and pro forma tables. The actual tables, of course, will be actual, and the pro forma will be as if all of the acquired systems were owned for the full period.
Okay. Because what we see right now, obviously, is just for Greenwood, et cetera, does not include NPG.
Correct.
We won't close NPG until early in the second quarter.
All right. Secondly, as I understand it, all the preferred now has been retired via the January add-on to the bond.
No, that is not correct. The original preferred capital contribution, which was $124.7 million, was returned. The accreted value was not returned and remains on our balance sheet. And that number at year end was about $90 million.
Okay, so $90 million is on pro forma, would be on the balance sheet.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And just to refresh everyone's memory, the reason why that $90 million also wasn't retired was that $90 million, or the accretion portion of the preferred, is subordinated to return of the original contributions of common.
Okay. Is there any plans for that? I don't know what form offhand. It's still in a preferred stock form on the balance sheet, or is it in some other kind of security for?
No, it's the same security as it was all along.
Okay. Is there any plans for that to go away?
Again, as Jerry mentioned, the waterfall requirement is that the common equity would have to, the original capital common contributions would have to be repaid prior to the repayment of the accreted preferred amount.
Got it.
So that would be how we would proceed.
So there are no plans at this point.
Got it. Now I fully understand. Okay, and then, so now, pro forma, yes, you have taken the leverage down about, from a net basis, you know, almost a half a turn, let's say, on a net leverage in calendar 2010. Now you leverage up with NPG, and are we back to the future again of the priority being delevering? And if so, where would you like to be?
I didn't quite understand or follow the half a turn deleveraging, but you know, we did put our statistics in there, and for 2011, yes, we are focused on deleveraging.
Well, maybe I have this wrong, but I thought you were net levered at 5.0 times at fiscal year end 2009.
That is correct.
Fiscal year 2010, 4.6 times before we get into any pro forma for NPG.
Right.
Okay.
I
rounded up a half a turn.
Yeah. So your point is we've delevered over the course of 2010, and now we've relevered. Based on the distribution, what is our future plan? Is that what you're saying, Bishop?
Yes,
and,
Mary.
And we're saying we're focused on deleveraging at this point.
Okay. And could you give us any kind of color as to where you would like your leverage to be?
But not at this point, no.
Okay. All right, I think that was all of my questions. Thank you.
You know, Bishop, let me expand on one thing. As we said when we raised the last offering of the bonds in January, we are committed to making sure that we retain the ratings on our bonds. And that implies that we could not go up significantly in leverage because that would jeopardize the bond ratings.
Right. Well, your ratings, you have B B3 B-minus ratings, and you don't want to see them slip to Trip C territory. Okay. Understood. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bishop.
Your next question comes from the line of Mike Pace with J.P. Morgan.
Hi, thank you. A couple of operational questions maybe for Tom. I guess in the release you said digital customers are taking fewer digital tiers. I wonder if you can expand on that. Is that would that include premium services? And I guess is that the result of maybe over the top or the economy still or just maybe the quality of that content? As it relates to the telephone business, the net adds in the quarter were, I guess, a little lower than what we were thinking. I'm just wondering what you think about that business. Has it, they're starting to see it become a little more difficult to get that incremental customer? Is it starting to mature a little bit in here? Just looking compared to, you know, the 20,000 plus, for as far as I can remember. Thanks.
Sure, Mike. On digital tiers, our average number of digital tiers per digital customer moved from 1.7 in 2009 to 1.4 in 2010. I think to your point around the economy, there's still some impact from that. I would also say as we launch VOD in more markets and with more content, now with 6,000 titles, 600 of which are in HD and thousands of which are free, you know, people are finding other means and ways to enjoy video programming, and so that may be having some impact on our digital tiers. As it relates to telephone, I think it's, you know, we still serve just basically approximately 1 in 6 homes that we pass. So even if there is some cord cutting going on there out there, which we know there is on the telephone side, people going to wireless, we still think we have meaningful opportunity in that space. We did watch kind of share versus yield, and we backed off a bit in terms of the amount of discounting we were doing and upselling we were doing in the fourth quarter around the telephone product in particular, so that may have had some impact. We are out in the marketplace today with a 25 for 5 offer where we're selling, upselling existing customers telephone for $25 with a price lock for 5 years.
If you already have, you have to take another service in a bundle.
So,
let me clarify one thing. On the digital tier, that does not include traditional pay services like HBO, Showtime, or Starz Encore.
Correct.
Thank you. Another question. I think you may have touched on this a little bit earlier, but maybe this is for Jerry, but I know you have a meaningful amount of retrans agreements that are coming up later this year, and I'm curious your thoughts on the negotiating environment and particularly with what the FCC has recently said about taking a look at this, you know, how you think this may shake out this year, if anything, and do you think the FCC gets involved?
We do have a large number of contracts coming due at year end. It's our cycle. We are beginning now, as we did in the last cycle, to reach out to the broadcasters to try to get some of those completed early so we don't have a year-end rush. The retrans has not changed. It's still a tough environment, and they are intense negotiations. But we'll get through this cycle. In terms of the FCC, we're not counting or relying upon FCC action or intervention. We hope that there are some rules clarified and or expanded to get a little more clarity about what the real marketplace is and maybe provide us with alternatives. But frankly, I wouldn't count on any major action shifting the entire RTC landscape anytime soon. That's just my opinion.
Okay, great. And then just real quick for Mary. Mary, the $1.9 billion of swaps that expire over the next 18 months or so, can you just break out for us the timing and size of those roll-offs?
Yep, if you just bear with me one sec. Mike, $175 million of them expire in April 2011, $400 million in October 2011, $950 million in April 2012, and $400 million in October 2012.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Mike.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Your next question comes from the line of David Sherritt with Barclays.
Thanks for taking the question. When you were going through different competitors earlier in the call, I guess just one, I don't know if I heard you touch on, was Frontier, just given the large overlap and some of their recent launches. I know they've talked about a TV Madness campaign is their recent promotion, and just kind of seeing what impact you've seen in the market from that. I know this is a satellite TV offer for a year and other, HETVs and laptop offers. Just what impact you've seen there?
So our largest overlap with Frontier is now in the state of West Virginia, where they acquired the lines from Verizon. We on its face, I would not tell you that our video product and the competitive environment there really is acting any different, that much differently than it has in the past, whether it's Dish, DirecTV, or land-based wired providers. We actually grew customer relationships for the first time ever in the state of West Virginia as well, which is something that we're proud of, and we've continued to grow bundled customers there as well. So as we have with Verizon and others, and now with Frontier, we continue to compete aggressively in the West Virginia marketplace.
Okay, no, that's good to hear. And then if I could just follow up on your comments around leverage and the goal basically is to delever from this point forward this year. Where does that leave you then in terms of M&A and other opportunities? Does that sort of rule out reasonably sized, larger acquisitions like an MPG, that kind of scale for the balance of the year? I guess I'll just start with that.
We will continue to look in the acquisition market. We mostly will look at surrounding tuck-in acquisitions. We mentioned that we can't go up too much in leverage because we don't want to jeopardize our bond ratings. If we were to look at a sizable acquisition, we would, in all probability, look at bringing on additional equity to maintain our leverage rates.
That's good to hear. And then maybe just following on that, I mean, in terms of the landscape and what you're seeing right now, I mean, are you seeing anything beyond tuck-ins, anything that is potentially larger, or is it just in that tuck-in category?
We have not received any sales of larger properties, any kind of information at this point, no.
Okay. Oh, that's great. Thank you very much.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. There are no further questions at this time.
Okay, thank you everyone for your continued interest. We appreciate it. Have a great day and great weekend.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.